Welcome, everybody. John Carlson, Show Talk Radio, 570 KVI radio program of record, ready to start another great week. And in just a few minutes, I'm going to tell you about this incredibly cool new online news site that is brand new. I didn't know about it until the Roanoke Conference. And Brian Haywood is going to join me here in just a few minutes to talk about it. Brian Haywood, of course, the guy behind the initiatives, four of which became law last year. By the way, you know, that never happened before. You've never seen one person get four initiatives enacted into law. And the media make much of the fact that three didn't make it, but four did. Anyway, Brian Haywood has created a stunningly cool website. And I'm going to share some news and information, and we're going to talk to Brian about this a little later on, like in a couple of minutes. But there's all sorts of other stuff going on, local and national. We got the president of Colombia. Colombia is ruled by a crazy leftist. And I mean a guy who's just a little bit nutty. And he's way out there on the far left as well. And Colombia had said that they were not going to accept any returning deportees. That people from Colombia who entered the United States illegally, who were now being deported back, Colombia would not accept them. And Donald Trump said, really? Well, if that's the case, you know, a 25% tariff sounds like a really good idea on all products coming to the United States from Colombia. And the president of that company, or that country rather, has now done a 180, Gustavo Petro. Not only will accept illegals from his country coming, being returned, deported back to Colombia, he is sending his presidential plane. The president of Colombia is sending his presidential plane to the United States to pick him up. The statement here is the government of Colombia, under the direction of President Gustavo Petro, has arranged the presidential plane to facilitate the dignified return of the compatriots who were going to arrive in the country today in the morning, coming from deportation flights. This measure responds to the government's commitment to guarantee decent conditions. In no way have Colombians, as patriots and subjects of rights, have not been and will be banished from Colombian territory. Marco Rubio, our new Secretary of State, said it is the responsibility of each nation to take back their citizens who are illegally present in the United States in a serious and expeditious manner. Colombian President Petro has now authorized flights and provided all needed authorizations and then canceled his authorization when the planes were in the air. As demonstrated by today's actions, the 25% emergency tariffs, which President Trump said in 1 week would be raised to 50%, as demonstrated by today's actions, we are unwavering in our commitment to end illegal immigration and bolster America's border security. And that is when President Petro did a 180 and said, all right, fine, I'll send my plane to pick them up. So when Donald Trump took this action, he was out golfing.
Of course, John, that's the best decisions were made.
He was on the third hole when he got word that Colombia had now reversed permission for deportation flights to land in Colombia. And Trump instantly said, well, okay, we're going to levy immediate 25% tariffs, and then we're going to raise that to 50% in a week. I'm not fooling around. And by the time he finished the eighth hole, okay, he didn't even need to get through the front nine. By the time he finished the eighth hole, the president of Colombia announced he was doing a 180. So it didn't take time. Then he issued a statement, which if we have time, I'll get to it a little later, which was just loony. I mean, it's like, think of a leftist professor in the humanities, you know, say English or over in the sociology department, writing a manifesto while on mushrooms. I mean, that's how it came off. You know, I mean, he's talking about Sacco and Vanzetti. You know, he's talking about how he admires Noam Chomsky and Paul Simon, and about how I don't shake hands with enslavers. What the hell is that about? What is he even referring to? Interestingly, by the way, the name of his country is, of course, named after Christopher Columbus. So, anyway, the bottom line is, it's not just that Trump uttered this threat. It's that the president of Colombia believes him. And, you know, for a country that complains about the United States being, you know, an economic oppressor, well, then why are you so determined to keep trade going with the United States? Why do you keep these relations going on with a country you say is oppressive? And the answer, of course, is that we're not oppressive and that we are very important for Colombia's well-being, for Colombia's status. So,
gosh, you think this would take like normally? Okay, well, give me the end of the week. Oh, we'll talk in February. But no, this is a Sunday afternoon. We're playing golf. I need an answer, and I want to hear it abruptly. And, John, how long ago was it we were at Stimpy's Bar and Grill just looking at an inauguration?
1 week ago.
Doesn't that seem like a long time ago with all that's been going on just in the first week?
1 week ago. That's all it took for this to happen. Okay, listen, I told our listeners I was going to make this exciting announcement, Brian Haywood has been delayed, but I'm going to go ahead with the announcement of what's happening. There is a new website about all the news in Washington State that you're looking for. It is called Haywire. The Haywire. I love it. HEYWIRE. And have you guys, are you familiar with the Drudge Report, of course?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Haven't gone to it in ages.
Yeah. It used to be known as a conservative news aggregator, which is to say, if you want to know what's going on in the world and in the country, you go to the Drudge Report, they have a big headline, and then all sorts of links to what is in the news that day. Headlines about what is going on in the news throughout the country. And then they have all sorts of existing news sites that you can click on. You know, your favorite columnists, your favorite newspapers, your favorite online cable news sites, et cetera, et cetera.
Haywire.org, if you're looking for it, anybody.
Yeah. Well, now, Brian Haywood has created that same kind of website for Washington State. It's called Haywire.org, HEYWIRE.org. As Mark just mentioned. And you go to haywire.org, here's what you see. You see big headline about something that went down on Friday in the legislature where the Democrats have ended free and open debate in the legislature. Again, they have ended debate. Now, here's what I am talking about. The Washington State Legislature has had a rule since the 1890s. So we are talking 130 years old. It guarantees free and open debate on the House floor. And the only way you can cut off debate is to have a supermajority agree to do so. So if debate does not simply end, then it takes a supermajority of two-thirds to end that debate. On Friday, the Democrats in the House voted to lower that threshold to a simple majority. So basically, the Democrats are saying anytime they don't want to talk about a bill that they have a majority of, they think they have a majority of votes to pass, but first you have to have debate, they'll just vote to not have the debate. Now, this is crucial because think about whenever you see media coverage of what's going down in Olympia, when they're covering pivotal legislation, dramatic legislation, showdowns on the floor of the House and Senate, what do you see? You see media coverage of the floor debate. Well, the Democrats in the state house just set the table. There won't be any more debates. See, when we had COVID and they were able to have virtual legislative sessions, they liked that because very few people were paying attention compared to normal. There were no, the legislature was closed. There were no organizations, no interest groups. There was no lobbying by citizens or unions or corporations. Anyone who wanted to go to Olympia to see what was going on, including the media, had no access. And the legislature could pass bills. Some of the most far-reaching and extreme bills were passed during that period of time. Well, they kind of liked that. And then when things got back to normal, even though they have commanding majorities in both caucuses, it bothers them that they have to sit there and listen to people who disagree with them, and more important, that the public might hear their point of view. So they are, so they voted on Friday to end the tradition of free and open debate by allowing a simple majority to strike down debate. Now, I learned about that at Roanoke. It had just happened. But for people who don't follow politics, who were not at Roanoke, how would they know that this happened? You're not going to see it in any newspaper. You probably haven't seen it on any television news coverage. But it's in the Haywire, HEYWIRE.org. And then over on the side, here are today's news items. FBI looking for woman robbing Seattle banks. Click on that, takes you right to the news coverage. Three strikes law worked this time. Life sentence. Really? I hadn't seen that in any news coverage, but it was in one newspaper, the News Tribune. So click on that. It'll take you to that article. One dead in Spokane Valley apartment fire. Next item, Washington State ranks dead last for overall driving experience study. And it takes you to the study. While most businesses backpedal on DEI, Costco defends political agenda. You can click on that story. And then underneath that, featured stories, there's dozens of them. You can get as deeply involved as you can do as deep a dive as you want into what's happening. But it's all about Washington State. It's all about what's happening here. That's what makes Haywire.org different from every other site. For instance, we got a brand new Department of Ecology director. I think it's the son of Sonny Sixkiller, the famous Husky quarterback. Casey Sixkiller is involved in Seattle politics. He's just been named to become the next director of ecology. A controversial member of the Olympia City Council, not seeking re-election. So the point I'm making here to you is this incredible news site is free. It's completely free for you to use. It is a comprehensive coverage. It offers comprehensive coverage of all of what is happening in Washington State politics. And then after you go through the stories, they have another category called media sources, where you've got publications all over the state, for all over the political spectrum, TV and radio stations, voices, including liberals like Erica Barnett and people like me, the John Carlson Show, the Ari Hoffman Show, you know, Todd Herman Show. It's all there. Thanks to Brian Haywood, who could join us here for a moment, going out of his way as he's traveling around the world right now and is in a very different time zone. Brian Haywood, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing, John?
I've been bragging since we got on the air all about Haywire.org. I love this. And I thought, is this just experimental? I said, no, it just went up. It's ready for everyone.
It is. We're going to keep making changes and playing around with it and trying to make it more user-friendly. But this is an idea that's been sitting in my head for a couple of years. Just it's hard to get information. It's hard to find everything all in one place, and there's nothing like it. So people need to be informed, and this is one way for them to do it.
I just clicked on the John Carlson Show. Wow, what a impressive looking page that is. Anyway,
one of our hot links.
it is such a wonderful site. Again, it focuses on news that is happening all over Washington State. It is not Seattle centric. It is Washington State centric, but also has a lot of local coverage within Washington State. And I just want our listeners to know about it. And I just wanted to publicly thank you for doing this. This is the best news about media access to the public I have seen in years, Brian Haywood.
Thank you. Well, there were two, when we went through the initiative process, there were a couple of things that it seemed like were a challenge, right? And one was the left domination on the money game. And that's another subject for another day. But the second one was, other than you and a couple of other sources, getting the message out and finding the information and then talking to people, they just didn't have a place to find the information about what was going on. And that includes, if all you do is listen to a certain small subset of media, you might think, well, things are going great or whatever bias they've got. But crime around the whole state is an issue, and it may be bigger or smaller than you think. And this is a place where you can see what's going on with crime and with politics and with environmental things. And we want to cover it and see if we can't make it easier for people to access and be informed when they vote.
So late last week, I told our listeners, and this is part of my panel presentation over the weekend at Roanoke, that a majority of voters here in Washington, according to the Cascade PBS Elway poll, the only one that asked people, how are you feeling? about, you know, your personal circumstances, your community, your state, your country moving forward. And a majority or a plurality of people said, well, I feel good about my personal situation. I feel good about how things in my community, I feel things are going to get better in 2025. Things are going to get better in our country, which was interesting given that they, Washington State electorate voted decisively against Donald Trump.
Voted.
But by a 49-45 plurality, they said, no, things will get better for our country. But they decisively said things will not get better for Washington State. And if you are at haywire.org, that story is highlighted. Just click on it, and all the information you want to see about that poll is right there for you. I just, again, one example of many. And how often is it refreshed, Brian? How often do you...
We're still working on that. So every day we're going to try to refresh some of it. Yeah. You know, maybe 10 of the stories will sort of rotate in and out. We'll never do just a complete every, the whole thing is gone, but we're going to try to refresh it every day, or it, you know, so you don't go more than 24 hours without something changing. And then the other thing we'll do is we'll see what news gets consumed more. And some of those might stay longer. They might get more featured up higher.
Okay.
Then we'll sort of play, we'll hopefully have a play back and forth with the audience, right?
Oh, no, making it, yes, making it interactive. Wow. And I got to say, you were pretty even-handed. I mean, on the one hand, you've got, you know, the Daily Record from Ellensburg, and you've got the Post-Millennial, that's Ari Hoffman. You got the Times and the Tri-City Herald, but you also have the Stranger, you know, the left-wing news site, yeah, in Seattle. You really have a genuine array of Washington State media and other news sites as well, TV, radio, podcasts, blogs. And I think this is one of the best things that's happened to Washington journalism since I've been alive. Haywire, HEYWIRE, haywire.org. It's our own basic Drudge Report for Washington State, all things in Washington. And whether you're on the right, the left, or in between, there's plenty of info for you there. And of course, whether you're left, right, or center, there's always great information from the social media sweep with Philip J. Vandervoort III. What's going on?
Yeah, late last week, a lot of these stories about immigration's customs enforcement raids, ICE raids, were coming up in different parts of the United States, and I've got a little bit more insight on that. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And on News Nation, you know, not exactly your right-wing...
They try and do it down the middle.
Yeah, I mean, right wing.
Basically, like
political media.
Yeah, they have people on, you know, on the left and right, but actually, what they're trying to do is get away from being in anyone's camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tom Holman, or Donald Trump's border security czar, was on with News Nation last week and said that ICE had conducted and made 1,300 arrests during operations late last week. 1,300 people arrested, about 1,000 of them based on criminal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So,
two of them here in Seattle.
Exactly. I know you've got a local story. Holman said in the interview, the other ones are either fugitives who've been through immigration court that became a fugitive, or collaterals in sanctuary cities because they forced us in the community. And as Holman concluded with News Nation, like I said, from day one, no one's off the table. So that begins to put things in perspective a little bit. About 1,300 arrests from last week, and you have about 1,000 of those that are criminal illegal aliens. Now, back on the home front here in Western Washington, three different fire agencies, fire departments, South County Fire, Puget Sound Fire, and East Pierce Fire, all have their firefighters and crews back from Southern California and Los Angeles. South County Fire Department, Snohomish County, mm-hmm. Posted this with some of the pictures of the crew that went down and the vehicles that came back. 2+ weeks after deploying to the L.A. wildfires, we're thankful all 8 South County firefighters are safely back home. Extremely proud of their work to protect communities from the Palisades fire. Our thoughts remain with those who still face a long road to recovery ahead. And then East Pierce Fire had another note that's worth mentioning. Our 5 East Pierce firefighters providing structural protection at the Palisades fire in Southern California have completed their deployment and finally returned home. We know their families were elated to have them back home safely, and we are too. So those nice. Updates for you based on the local firefighters that went south.
They have done their job, by the way. If you want to pitch in and help the people in Southern California the way these firefighters have, you know, they pitched in with their talent, with their time and their talent. If you want to pitch in with a donation, the Salvation Army has a special focus on Southern California, their Southern California chapter. And we're talking a lot of people who suddenly find themselves without a home, and a lot of people who have lost their jobs. A lot of people, there are people in shelters, and the Salvation Army is trying to help them, you know, pick up and get back on their feet again. And of course, they still, you know, are not out of the woods yet. The danger has abated substantially, but they still have problems down there.
Well, they got all the rain now, and now they're worried it's a big washout, mudslides, and
mudslides
again.
So, yeah, talk about too much of a good thing. They needed the rain a week ago. It finally came, but now it won't stop. So, what, the mudslides putting out the fires? You know, it's not...
Well, the rain is helping, but again, it's just, you know, some of the hillsides down there and where some of those homes are sitting, it's just like, we'll wait and see what happens. But, yeah, they're getting now the rainy season for a week or so. It's just nonstop.
It is coming up here on 6:40 in the morning. And as you heard Philip J. Vandervoort III say, they have already rounded up over 1,000 illegal immigrants who are in this country committing crimes or fugitives from justice. Two of those arrests came here in Washington over the weekend. Here is Michelle Esteban from Como 4.
The arrests are focused on non-citizens who have committed crimes. Officials say Edgar de la Cruz Manzo has been arrested, and they say he is a convicted child rapist. The other is Kevin Edith Torres Velasquez, a Honduran national, allegedly found with cocaine, fentanyl, and a firearm.
Ah. Again, convicted of rape of a child, and Mr. Velasquez, a drug dealer. Both of them arrested, one on Friday, one on Saturday. Let's keep this trend going. And by the way, for those who are on the political left, why wouldn't you want this to happen? You may not like Trump, but put Trump aside. In fact, put politics completely aside. Why wouldn't you want drug dealers who are in the country illegally deported, arrested and deported? Why wouldn't you want child molesters in the country illegally to be arrested and deported? If they don't have pending criminal charges, get them out of the country. If they do have pending criminal charges, then try them. If they're convicted, have them serve their sentence and get them out of the country. If you try them and they're acquitted, they're still here illegally, get them out of the country. They're bad news. So this is an issue where, frankly, they should be on the side. This is one where the left should be on the side of Tom Homan and the Trump administration. But again, they're so blinded by anti-Trump bias that they said, no, even if it means keeping criminals here, we'd rather do it. It just makes zero sense. All right. By the way, speaking of illegal immigrants and crime, we got another one, but it wasn't the Trump administration that got him. It was Washington State's three strikes, you're out law. This out of Pierce County. A 46-year-old man convicted of second-degree murder shot and wounded his wife, and then when she started to bleed out, did not flag down help for her. She probably could have lived, but because he didn't summon any help for her, she bled out and died. So he's convicted of second-degree murder, but what do you know? It's his third strike, so off he went. Ruben Cervantes Rios. Again, life without parole, courtesy of Washington's three strikes, you're out law. He told Pierce County Superior Court Judge Sabrina Ahrens in a letter written in Spanish that the shooting of his 31-year-old wife, Heather Cooper, was an accident. It was never his intention to hurt her, and he wanted to apologize to her family, let them know that he has suffered the same way they have. The statement was read by the defendant's attorney, translated by an interpreter. Quote, "To suggest that this was an accident when you had the power, the ability to seek some care for her just flies in the face of reason," said the sentencing judge. The defendant's lawyer, Michael Stewart, said that when the shooting occurred, husband and wife were involved in drug sales in a dangerous area, and that Rios, the killer, was armed. He went on to say, whether the defense could argue that it was negligent or whether it was an accident, the jury rendered a verdict on manslaughter and murder too, finding the predicate of assault in the second degree. They did not find that he intended to cause the death of Heather Cooper. Well, he let it happen. He shot her. And then when she was bleeding, he shot her in the shoulder. The bullet went through her shoulder and struck her in the neck and in the mouth. So she died in agony from blood loss. The medical examiner saying she might have survived the shooting, but he passed a number of opportunities to stop and ask for help. Instead, video shows him riding away from the scene on a bicycle and trying to get out of the way when Tacoma police officers arrived. They nailed him. And because he had two other offenses on his record, keep this in mind, someone in the country illegally had two other strikes, and he wasn't deported. That's what sanctuary status looks like. That's who they're protecting. He was convicted of serious drug dealing back in 2007. Before that, second-degree attempted assault 2004. Also convicted of inciting criminal profiteering after he and several other prison inmates ordered the murder of a 26-year-old gang leader in Tacoma who ended up shooting the leader and another man at a West End home in Tacoma. His lawyer said that Mr. Rios is actually a really nice guy when he's clean and sober. But when Ruben Rios is using methamphetamine, well, he's not as nice a guy. He apparently had relapsed, was using methamphetamine every day. The defense attorney said that Rios knows is sober and is now truly remorseful for the pain he has caused. Again, I'm glad we have three strikes, you're out for this guy, but I want to know why he wasn't out of the country after his first. And we know why. This is what sanctuary looks like. What a crazy story coming out of Vermont. 21-year-old graduate from Lakeside, one of the elite private schools in the Northwest, is now under arrest for fatally shooting a Border Patrol agent in Vermont, the northern border.
A 21-year-old woman from Washington is charged with federal crimes tonight in connection with the shooting death of a U.S. Border Patrol agent on the East Coast.
This happened 20 minutes south of the Vermont-Canadian border in the town called Coventry. Sebastian Robertson from King 5 has this.
21-year-old Teresa Youngblood of Washington State is facing two weapons charges and the possibility of life in prison after the shooting death of a Border Patrol agent during a traffic stop in Vermont. According to the criminal complaint filed in U.S. District Court, Youngblood and a man named Felix Bockholt, a German citizen, had been under surveillance by law enforcement for about a week leading up to the deadly shooting. Investigators say an employee of a hotel called the police, concerned after seeing the pair dressed in all black with protective equipment and open carrying a pistol. Tuesday, Border Patrol agents pulled over the vehicle they were riding in to conduct an immigration inspection. That's when they allege Youngblood, the driver of the vehicle, opened fire. Inside the vehicle the two were driving, authorities recovered various pieces of tactical gear, including a ballistic helmet, night vision goggles, firearms, and ammunition. As the investigation continues, the community is mourning the loss of Border Patrol agent David Chris Malland. Earlier today, hundreds of law enforcement personnel attended a procession escorting his body to a funeral home.
Youngblood was shot during the confrontation, taken to the hospital, is expected to survive. That's according to the U.S. Attorney's Office. She faces, Joyce, a minimum of 10 years in prison, a maximum of life if convicted.
Her friends from Lakeside are just dismayed, aghast. They say, can't believe that this happened. Apparently, she just completely withdrew from life. Oh, good morning. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. I sure did. Roanoke Conference was wonderful. Lots of KVI listeners were there. And, you know, terrific speeches from Coleman Hughes and others. Like 450, 500 people there.
I mean, and you got nice sunny weather. Decent, I hear, at the ocean.
Very.
For the weekend.
Yeah, it was sideways rain last year. This year was, well, like it's been everywhere, you know, last week. Cold, but very sunny and very dry, which means, you know, not as great a threat from ice, you know, on the roads or anything like that. And so, again, we just had a wonderful time. One of the great things that happened, we talked about this during the first hour of the show, there is a brand new news site about Washington State. It's called Haywire.org, H-E-Y, Haywire.org. It was set up by Brian Haywood, and it's basically a Drudge Report for Washington State. You know, the Drudge Report used to be a lot more famous than it is now, but it's known as a news aggregator, which is to say they collect story headlines in different media from around the country, and they spotlight those stories. And then you scroll down a bit, and then they have dozens and dozens of media sources for you to click on. You know, the Peninsula Passageway, the Seattle Times, Como TV, The John Carlson Show, The Ari Hoffman Show, Post Millennial, his online news site. Dozens and dozens and dozens of places for you to get your news, but you don't have to go to 15 or 20 different news sites. Just go to one, haywire.org, and just click on the news site. And click on the story that interests you. Man, show prep just got a lot easier for me. But never mind that. Is if you want to keep up on what's happening in Washington that you don't think you're getting from mainstream media, and by the way, you're not, which is why this show is so indispensable. I often talk to you about things that the rest of the media miss. Now you've got an additional friend, not just the John Carlson Show, but now you also have haywire.org. It's completely free, and the news sites are all legit. So your unfiltered access to the world of media throughout Washington State. That's the other thing I love about it. It's not Seattle-centric. It is news that's happening everywhere. So Haywire, that's with an E and a Y, haywire.org. Okay. A lot of other things I wanted to get into this hour of the John Carlson Show. We talked about this 21-year-old girl from Seattle who went to the very posh private academy, Lakeside School, which has a very storied history. Lots of old money, you know, send their kids to Lakeside, but that's also where Bill Gates met Paul Allen back in the 70s, and that turned out to be a pretty propitious alliance. But this 21-year-old girl, Teresa Youngblood, gets involved with this guy she met who's from Germany. And according to her friends and family, she just did a complete 180. I just ended up flipping, Jekyll and Hyde-like, and announced to her family that she was withdrawing from them. Boy, that's got to be heartbreaking for a mom and dad to hear your 21-year-old literally wants nothing more to do with you. And she went to her home, collected all her belongings, and left, and she said, I'm not coming back. And she was more correct than she meant to be. She gets involved with this guy. They end up on the other side of the country, near the Vermont-Canadian border. They stop in at a hotel, and she and he walk in. They're all dressed in black, like Antifa. Black shoes, black pants, black, I was going to say shirts, but they had protective black clothing over their shirts. She's open carrying a pistol. And again, it's just like a couple of Darth Vaders walk into this hotel and the clerk is, what the hell is this? And the clerk ends up calling the police and saying, keep your eye out. Something very strange is going on here. And so they keep an eye on them. And then when they're headed for the border, they try and stop their car. And they do. And a Border Patrol officer walks up to the car and boom, gets shot. And they say this 21-year-old girl is the shooter, Teresa Youngblood. A Border Patrol agent died in the line of duty. Other border agents immediately fired back, wounding the girl and killing her accomplice, who police say was reaching for his own weapon. What on earth were they out to do? They don't know. They found all sorts of firearms and plenty of ammo and what might be raw materials for an IED. I mean, it's not clear what their agenda was. It's not clear what they were doing. I hope we learn more very soon, but just what a strange story. If anyone out there knows this family and can supply any context, I guess this girl was not known for being politically radical or even politically active. Maybe we'll find out different, but right now her friends are just saying that this makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. It's almost like she just came under this guy's spell and just followed him and went in his direction. And it took a remarkably short period of time for it to happen. So, believe me, we're going to be learning a lot more about this. All right. Harry Enten from CNN. Since immigration has become the hot button issue of the week, believe it or not, we're just 1 week into the Donald Trump administration. 1 week. And what he has already accomplished is just stunning. We'll get into what he's done about DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, a little later on in the show. But the Biden administration went so far over the top on the issue of opening the southern border and created so many problems for so many Americans that the country has essentially changed its view about deportation. Harry Enten from CNN, their poll specialist, their polling guy, lays out the numbers. It's incredible that in 8 years' time, the percentage of Americans supporting mass deportation of illegals has jumped nearly 20 points. Not it's up to 20%. No, it's 20% higher than it was. It's now well over 50%. Here is Harry Enten laying it all out.
Yeah, sometimes I like blunt questions because they sort of get at the underlying feelings that people have. So this is about as blunt a question as you can get. Deport all immigrants here illegally. I will note the ABC News poll asked about undocumented immigrants. Mm-hmm. So we have slightly different questions, but these were all taken within the last month. And there's real uniformity here. That's what I really think you see. You see real uniformity. Deport all immigrants who are here illegally. 55% of the New York Times. Marquette, 64%. CBS News, 57%. ABC News with a slightly different question, 56%. So what you're seeing essentially here is very clear indication that a majority of Americans, in fact, when they're asked this blunt question, which I believe gets at the underlying feelings, do in fact want to deport all immigrants who are here illegally. There's no arguing with these different numbers because they're all essentially the same across four different pollsters.
So if they say yes today-ish, how has that changed over time?
Yeah, this is where I think you get very interesting. And so we'll take a look at that ABC News question in particular, because you can really see that there's been a massive shift from when Trump was first getting into office 8 years ago, right? Deport all undocumented immigrants. You go back to 2015, I'm going to come to your side of the screen. It was 42%. Hello. Go to 2016. It was 36%. Look at where we are now. This was taken at the end of last year, 56%. This is 20 points higher than it was just before Trump got into office the first time. So feelings towards immigration in this country, feelings towards undocumented immigrants and deporting all of them have become considerably more hawkish. And I think that gives Donald Trump much more leverage to go with the American people and sort of have these hawkish, some might say harsh different rhetoric and also issue-based sort of going after immigrants who are here illegally. And so I think the American people are going to give Donald Trump the benefit of the doubt to do what he wants to do, at least if you believe these blunt questions, including this one.
Okay. But it doesn't stop there, because Americans also want to see legal immigration levels reduced. So they want everyone who's here illegally out. And, of course, I know many of you are saying, oh, sure, they do today, but what happens when we don't have, you know, people to do a lot of the labor that Americans don't want to do, take the jobs that a lot of Americans don't want to do? Bottom line is, the Trump administration is doing this just right. Tom Homan is saying, we're going after illegals, we're going to have mass deportation, and we're going to do it in order of priority. Priority one, people who are in the country illegally who are committing crimes, get them out. Two, people in the country illegally who are security risks, who are able to walk in because Biden deliberately kept the border open. Priority three, people who were in the country illegally who received a hearing from an immigration judge who ruled that they must now leave the country. Maybe they overstayed a visa. Maybe they, you know, came in and were arrested by ICE and demanded a hearing. Maybe they claimed to be an asylum seeker. 90% of those are rejected and then ordered out of the country. Unbelievably, 1.3 million illegals who have been ordered out by a judge, in other words, they've received their due process, are ignoring the order. So that's our third priority. And while that's going on, Tom Homan is calling for a crackdown on work sites that hire illegals. He said, by the way, it's workplace raids where we often find the victims of human trafficking, where girls are brought across the border, children brought across the border for obscene purposes. So Tom Homan knows how to get this job done. So Americans want people here illegally out, but they also want to curtail legal immigration. Here, have a listen.
How about immigration levels?
Yeah, okay. So this sort of goes in line with that, right? Which is, again, trying to get at the underlying feelings. Want immigration levels decreased. This includes legal and illegal immigration. Look at this. Last year, 55%. That is the highest level since the 9/11 aftermath. You go back just to 2020.
This, again, legal and illegal. People want less people coming into the country.
Exactly. They want less people coming into the country. Look at that. That's a 14-point rise from 2023. You go back to 2016 when Donald Trump again was running for president the first time. It's 38%. That's a 17-point rise. So the bottom line is more folks want people who are here illegally deported, and they're overall feelings towards immigration have become considerably more hawkish since Donald Trump was first getting in office.
So Americans are moving in this direction. Now, what you need to know about this is that this trend is not just happening in the United States of America. It's happening in Canada. Again, in Justin Trudeau's Canada, they not only announced a renewed crackdown on people in Canada illegally, but they are cutting back on immigration levels, legal immigration. So when you hear about, oh, this is so xenophobic, this is so selfish of the United States, this is a trend around the world in countries that people want to go to that they've let in too many. It's created all sorts of problems, legal and illegal, refugees and immigrants. and they want to cut back. Sweden is now announcing a change in legal immigration and citizenship. So when your liberal progressive friends say, why can't we be more like Sweden? Sweden now says you cannot be a citizen until you have lived in the country for 8 years with no crimes, no unpaid debts. If you wish to seek citizenship, you have to pass a language exam in Sweden and a test on Swedish values. Quote, citizenship must be earned, not be handed out unconditionally, says their Minister of Migration, Johan Forsell. Sweden had, like a lot of liberal social democracies over the last 10 years, had welcomed, in the name of multiculturalism, welcomed people from different cultures, like hardcore Muslim Moroccans and Syrians. This has not worked well. A crime has skyrocketed, particularly violent crime. At one point, Sweden had the highest rate of gang killings in Europe. Welfare benefits have skyrocketed. Social unity has crumbled. And political parties that had been pledging to get tougher on immigration all of a sudden started doing really, really well. So it's not just America. It is Canada, Sweden, and other European countries as well. We've had enough. Countries exist for a reason. Countries have a distinct identity as nations, and people want to preserve that. You got 22 minutes after 7 o'clock. People also want to preserve the social media sweep and hear more from it, so Philip Jay's right around the corner as the Commute with Carlson continues. Good morning. Doobie Brothers, wake you up here, 7:26 in the morning, Monday morning, the Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. Vandenberg III, what's going on in the social media world?
Did you hear about this whole thing with the United States Air Force and the Black Tuskegee Airmen as it relates to the Trump executive order on the DEI ban?
Yeah.
Did you come across this?
I saw it on the weekend. Do tell.
Yeah, let me explain the chronology here. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. I had seen a post from a New York television station. It said the Air Force has removed training courses for service members that included historical videos of Black Tuskegee Airmen and female World War II pilots to comply with Trump's DEI ban. I thought, that doesn't really make a lot of sense. DEI wasn't really about training materials or anything like that. I mean, so much of it was about hiring, at least mostly. And then come to find out that this is going to get reversed in some way, shape, or form. And I'll start with one post from an Alabama U.S. Senator, Katie Britt.
Mm-hmm.
She writes, I have no doubt Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth will correct and get into the bottom of the malicious compliance we've seen in recent days. President Trump celebrated and honored the Tuskegee Airmen during his first term, promoting a legendary aviator, Charles McGee, to brigadier general, pinning his stars in the Oval Office. In his second term, the Trump administration will probably continue to deploy respect and elevate the Tuskegee Airmen's legacy. Their history and their lessons will continue to be taught because their legacy is one of excellence, of success, and of unquestionable merit. The Pentagon, under Pete Hegseth's leadership, restores its focus to lethality. There is no greater historical example of highly skilled, valiant fighting force than the Tuskegee Airmen. And Pete Hegseth picked up on that post by Katie Britt, the senator, and said, amen, we're all over it, Senator. This will not stand. And now I'm looking at a post from the San Antonio Express News. It says, after uproar, Air Force says recruits will again be taught about Tuskegee Airmen. So I guess dilemma solved. But I'm trying to figure out, did the United States Air Force want to try and thumb their nose at Trump over this DEI stuff? Did somebody go rogue? I don't completely know what happened.
It was someone who didn't want to retreat from DEI curriculum. So they said, oh, but this is just about teaching people about the Tuskegee Airmen. And why would they stop that? And in other words, they're trying to create a problem. No one is concerned about teaching about the civil rights history of the armed forces, the Air Force in particular, et cetera, et cetera. So it was an attempt by someone to try and create a controversy.
Yeah,
and so. Again, wisely and quickly nipped in the bud
by
our new, because when we got off the air on Friday, everything was in limbo with Pete Hegseth, our new Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth.
Need to close out the social media sweep with a note of sadness and our condolences. The passing of Carol James, the wife of UW football coach Don
Carol
James.
Carol passed away?
Yeah. She passed away at the age of 92. University of Washington Athletics posting, Husky community mourns the passing of Carol James and offers our sympathies to the James family and all who knew her. And even the current football coach for the UW, Jed Fish, posted, our football program and my family, Sharon, offering our deepest sympathies as well to the James family. And
I loved
legendary
her.
Couple.
Loved her. Such a wonderful, down-to-earth woman. Got to know her well, regularly.
You had said she was
talked
a listener, wasn't she?
She was a listener and a fan, and we always enjoyed talking off air. She was just a real wonderful lady, and everybody who knew Carol James loved her. Oh, rest in peace. God, open your arms. Carol James is ready to, well, Carol's there already. Carol's there. It is coming up on 7:31, The Commute with Carlson. I like to do
listeners, John, you know, come to January, one priority is setting aside enough budget to afford your concert choices for the year. Just got a list already of some of the groups saying we want to be at the Washington State Fair late summer, including Men at Work, Christopher Cross, and this group, Toto.
Oh, my goodness. Sounds like Yacht Rock Central.
So, and they say general admission, tickets will go on sale. Washington State Fair for Toto and the others. You can have a look. This Friday, John, you can never be too early on setting up your plans for late summer here 2025.
All right, we're holding the line here. 36 minutes after 7 o'clock. If you hadn't heard the news, we touched on it during the 6 o'clock hour. The administration has commenced with ICE raids, Immigration Customs Enforcement raids. They are picking up illegals who have committed crimes while here, and they're sending them back. One such country where they're sending them back to is Colombia. And after getting authorization, when the planes were in the air, the Colombian government said, no, we're changing our mind. This came to the attention of Donald Trump while he was golfing. Supposedly, he was on the third hole. And Trump instantly ordered 25% tariffs, which would rise to 50% in 1 week on anything coming to this country from Colombia. By the time Donald Trump finished the eighth hole, the government of Colombia and its president, leftist Gustavo Petro, did a 180. In fact, President Petro said that he was sending his own private plane to pick up the illegals here. And the take that we have is not to lavish praise on him for changing his mind. No. Our response is the tariffs are going into effect until these people are repatriated. Until the plane lands, these tariffs will go ahead as scheduled. So the tariffs will probably not have to be invoked because they are now taking them back. But the president, who is a socialist, is furious at having to accept these deportation flights. I mean, not only were we going to impose the tariffs, we were putting visa restrictions on any government officials traveling here from Colombia. What we'll call enhanced customs inspections. And so here is the statement coming back from Petro. Again, understand, they can fume and vent all they want, but they've changed their position. They have stood down. And so here is what Gustav Petro said. I'm reading it as written. Trump, I don't really like traveling to the U.S. It's a bit boring. But I confess there are some commendable things. I like going to the black neighborhoods of Washington, D.C., where I saw a fight in the U.S. Capitol between blacks and Latinos with barricades, which seemed like nonsense to me because they should join together. Again, I'm just reading you the words of the Colombian president. I confess that I like Walt Whitman, the poet, and Paul Simon, the singer, and Noam Chomsky, the radical, and Miller. Not sure what Miller he's referring to. I confess that Sacco and Vanzetti, a couple of Italian immigrant anarchists from a century ago, I confess that Sacco and Vanzetti, who have my blood, are memorable in the history of the USA, and I follow them. They were murdered by labor leaders in the electric chair, by the fascists who are within the USA, as well as within my country. Again, this goes back a century. I don't like your oil, Trump. It's going to wipe out the human species because of greed. Maybe one day, with a glass of whiskey that I accept, despite my gastritis, we can talk frankly about this. But it's difficult because you consider me part of an inferior race, and I'm not, nor is any Colombian. Trump has never said that. He's not an inferior race. This guy's just an inferior leader. But let's go on. So if you know someone who is stubborn, that's me, period. You can try to carry out a coup with your economic strength and your arrogance like they did with Salvador Allende in Chile, but I will die true to my principles. I resisted torture and I resist you. I don't want slavers next in Colombia. We already had many and we freed ourselves. What I want next in Colombia are lovers of freedom. If you can't join me, I'll go elsewhere. Colombia is the heart of the world, and you didn't understand that this is the land of yellow butterflies, of the beauty of Remedios, but also of the colonels like Arellano Buendia, of which I am one, perhaps the last. You will kill me, but I will survive in my people, which lives before yours in the Americas. We are peoples of the winds, the mountains, the Caribbean Sea, and of freedom. You don't like our freedom? Okay. I don't shake hands with white slavers. I shake hands with the white libertarian heirs of Lincoln and the black and white farm boys of the USA, at whose graves I cried and prayed on a battlefield, which I reached after walking the mountains of Italian Tuscany and after being saved from COVID. This is word for word what this Colombian president wrote. Overthrow me, Mr. President, and the Americas and humanity will respond. Colombia now stops looking north. It looks to the world. Our blood comes from the blood of the Caliphate of Cordoba, the civilization of that time of the Roman Latins of the Mediterranean, the civilization of that time who founded the Republic, democracy in Athens. Our blood comes from the black resistance fighters turned into slaves by you. Colombia is the first free territory of America before Washington, before all of America, and I take refuge in its African songs. My land is made up of goldsmiths who worked in the time of the Egyptian pharaohs and of the first artists in the world. You will never rule us. You're opposed. This is their president. You think Trump goes off unhinged every once in a while? He's got nothing on this guy.
Do we know if has President Trump ever met this guy or talked to him on the phone before? Or is this like, this is how we're meeting for the first time? Oh, wow.
You will never rule us. You're opposed to the warrior who rode our lands shouting freedom, whose name is Simon Bolivar. Okay. He goes on to say, I am informed that you impose a 50% tariff on the fruits of our human labor to enter the United States, and I do the same. Okay. Let our people plant corn that was discovered in Colombia and feed the world. So that is your president of Colombia who, while obviously thrashing about rhetorically, has done a 180. They are now taking illegals back. By the way, he said, you're treating them like criminals. They are criminals, literally. They're illegal. They're illegal aliens from Colombia who are committing crimes in America. That's why we're sending them back. They're criminals. Back to the country of origin. Yeah.
Before we know it, this guy's going to be running for U.S. Congress in one of the New York City boroughs or something.
Well, geez, it sounds like a speechwriter for Pramila Jayapal. You know, I mean, it just... Yeah, even Pramila's not that crazy. This is just... This is nuts. But again, this is what Trump is now exposing. This is how crazy some of these people are.
Well, that sounds like a dictator. Just what you've shared in his wording?
Yes. And I love the fact that he's talking about resisting slavery and, you know, from Colombia. Does he know who Colombia is named after? 46 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, J.D. Vance made an appearance on Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan. Very interesting what he had to say. We will be running a couple of highlights. It was a fairly involved interview, but we've got a couple of key takeaways. One of them on the issue of birthright citizenship and that controversy. And the second is she tried a gotcha on reducing consumer prices. And we'll play you J.D. Vance's response. This guy's just a natural. He is so comfortable going right back at these people. All right. It's Boeing time, 7:47. The Commute with Carlson. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning. Bring it home local. You folks in Renton know all about this over the weekend, over 60 cars were broken into in 8 different locations. 4 guns stolen out of vehicles. Again, over 60 vehicles. They believe the total could be much higher. In 8 different locations. This is how brazen a car prowling has gotten. Here is Michelle Esteban from Como 4 with Lin-Ann Nguyen.
Right now, searching for a group of suspects linked to, get this, 60 car break-ins and thefts, including stolen guns. One of the alleged suspects caught on camera right here. You see him there in that parking lot. Hi, everybody. I'm Michelle Esteban. Police say the break-ins happened in 8 different locations in Renton, totaling thousands of dollars in damages. Como's Lin-Ann Nguyen spoke with the victims dealing with the aftermath today. She's live at the Renton PD. What do we know about the suspects at large here?
Well, Michelle, Renton police believe that the same group is responsible for dozens of car break-ins overnight. And right now, they believe they're looking for 3 to 4 suspects.
Both my car's windows break down, and then nothing serious has been taken out in the car, but the damage is done.
Akram Sheikh's family hasn't been able to leave the house much this weekend, with both their vehicles damaged overnight by vandals.
Still, I am in shock. So I'm wondering why.
The Sheikh family is not alone. Renton police are investigating more than 60 similar incidents from overnight. Cars rifled through, windows shattered, with personal items and 4 guns stolen.
So now we have 4 guns that are also out on the street with these individuals. So they're considered to be armed and dangerous at this point.
Renton.
That's Megan Black from the Renton Police Department, used to be on King 5.
And police say they started getting calls just before midnight. The incidents spread out across at least 8 different locations, including hotel parking lots, other businesses, and residential areas. Surveillance video from one business shows someone with their face covered peering into vehicles with a light, then appearing to grab something out of at least one vehicle before running off.
It was just like senseless, like they just busted the window for no gain.
Frank Perkins' work vehicle was broken into while parked outside a hotel on the 1800 block of East Valley Road. His belongings tossed into some nearby bushes. His vehicle was among several others also hit in the same lot.
Like the gain is so minimal, and the cost to everybody else is just so high. Like most people, I mean, everywhere are more worried about paying rent, paying for their food. You know, they don't have an extra $500 or $600 to get a window fixed.
Okay, this is why we need to increase the penalties, dramatically increase the penalties for car prowl. The most important thing, the most valuable thing a lot of people own is their vehicle. If you don't own a home, the most important, valuable thing you have is your car, which is also your lifeline to your job. It's your freedom. It carries you around. And these people busting out these windows, they don't care about what they're doing and what it costs people. You know, we need to make sure they do care. There's only one way. Make them feel the heat from this kind of criminal behavior in the first place. Hour number 3. Welcome back. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, right where you need to be. The sun is shining, a little chilly out there, but another, again, sunny, dry day. Appreciate you letting me be part of your day. We had a wonderful time at Roanoke Conference. Lots of KVI listeners made it. The sold out. It was like our event for the inauguration watch party.
Stimpy's?
These things.
Bar and Grill.
You know, events that we're involved in tend to get very crowded very early. And
they're in high demand.
The Roanoke, I think, might need a bigger venue next time out. But anyway, no, we had a great time. And tomorrow, I'm going to share with you, I was on a panel. In fact, I was on the panel that kicked off the entire conference on Saturday on, hey, Republicans are winning in Washington, D.C. They're winning across the country. Why aren't they winning here? How come, you know, we're first in Washington, D.C. and last in Washington State? Well, I'm going to talk about that on tomorrow's show. So you don't want to miss that. We're going to do that at 7:03 a.m. tomorrow. So please, please be listening for that. Last night, when I got back, I was, you know, preparing for the show while trying to watch the Bills-Chiefs game. That was a thrill. That was a thrilling game. And I remember telling everyone before the Bills and the Chiefs squared off at Arrowhead that I said, I think this is the real Super Bowl, the Bills and Chiefs. I think this is the real game between the top two teams. Now I'm not so sure. Because it was very, very close. Buffalo did so well and just couldn't quite eke it out. They lost by 3 points. But the Philadelphia Eagles just...
Yeah, what happened there?
Body slam.
Yeah.
Body slam their opponents. I mean, the Washington Commanders used to be the Washington Redskins.
Washington had a couple of fumbles, which didn't help their cause. And every time Washington made a mistake, Philadelphia punished them.
But when you score over 50 points in a league championship
playoff game. Yeah.
So I think Chiefs, Eagles, that's going to be that might be the throwdown of the ages.
Here. So am I correct, guys? Do we have a blue state and a red state in the Super Bowl?
No.
Well, I mean, both states went to Trump.
Yeah.
So, okay. I mean, Trump won Pennsylvania.
I heard somebody shout it out. I thought, let me check with the crew in the morning.
Well, let's put it this way.
I was curious.
Pennsylvania was reasonably close. I think he won it by 2 percentage points.
Yeah, definitely close.
Missouri? That was just by acclamation. Mm. I said, do we even need to go to the polls here in Missouri? Nah, it's Trump.
I have a controversy about yesterday's game. I don't know if you know this. No. I mentioned it to you both off the air before the show.
And you're probably going to
say
what
I was watching the games with some friends at what I would call an upscale bowling alley in the South Center area. And anybody who's been through the South Center area of Tukwila and probably knows the exact spot I'm talking about. How much is too much to pay for a pitcher of beer? This is kind of what I think is an inflationary story.
$13.50 I paid for a group of
people. That would be a bargain.
Last week.
Yeah, really? I was going to say, you know.
And I'm not talking some 6% alcohol, small batch, you know, crafted
IPA.
I'm talking about a pitcher of Coors Light.
Pitcher of Coors Light, that should go for between, like, I don't know, $12 and $15.
I would say
$25.
Wow, what a bowling alley,
right?
With a TV on.
$25. Is that the normal price, or did they jack it up?
Because
it was a football
idea.
Watch?
Did you see if tip was included on the bill?
My jaw hit the floor. And suffice to say, I'm watching the Super Bowl at home. I will not be going out. I've spent all my Super Bowl game watching out to eat and watch game spending yesterday.
Maybe ask our listeners if you've got a really good buffet, if you've got a really good spread plan for Super Bowl Sunday, can you invite Philip J. Vandervoort III to come over to your place? Oh, man.
So,
wow.
Like I said,
$25 bucks.
More inflation stories for Jay Inslee and now Bob Ferguson's Washington.
I know nobody drove home drunk from that party. No, just half a beer. That's all I can afford.
Right. Might have to put this pitcher on layaway. Come back next week for it.
8:08 in the morning on the John Carlson Show. Okay, J.D. Vance on Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan yesterday. They were talking about immigration. They were talking about the economy. First, here is how he dealt with her kind of gotcha question about the economy. Again, this guy is just so good, so natural. Listen.
The way that your lower prices is that you encourage more capital investment into our country. And you ask specifically, what executive order is going to help lower prices? all of the stuff that we've done on energy, to explore more energy reserves, to develop more energy resources in the United States of America, one of the main drivers of increased prices under the Biden administration is that we had a massive increase in energy prices. Donald Trump has already taken multiple executive actions that are going to lower energy prices, and I do believe that means consumers are going to see lower prices at the pump and at the grocery store, but it's going to take a little bit of time. Rome wasn't built in a day, and while we've done a whole lot, we can't undo all of the damage of Joe Biden's presidency in 4 days.
Well, there are a lot of things that contributed to higher energy prices, and there was record oil and gas production.
Yes, Joe Biden did many terrible things to lead to an increase in prices. I agree, Margaret.
No, but all the things you experience at the grocery store are what people touch and feel. That's what you were talking about, bacon on the campaign trail.
Of course, of course.
Those things. When do consumers actually get to touch and feel a difference in their lives?
Well, Margaret, how does bacon get to the grocery store? It comes on trucks that are fueled by diesel fuel. If the diesel is way too expensive, the bacon's going to become more expensive. How do we grow the bacon? Our farmers need energy to produce it. So if we lower energy prices, we are going to see lower prices for consumers, and that is what we're trying to fight for.
In other words, what he's saying is you have to look at how the previous administration's policies raised the overall price on doing business. Not just in that particular industry of bacon manufacturing, you know, bacon packaging and that process, but everything that explains how bacon comes to be. The prices that farmers pay at the feedlot, the prices for transportation, the increase in what it costs farmers, and the increase what it costs ranchers. So, I'm glad. You know, the increases in power, not to mention, you know, transportation. So I'm glad he answered the question that way, because that happens to be the right answer. There is no, well, for this industry, it's caused by that. And that industry over there, it's caused by this. There are overall factors that raise the price of enterprise for everyone. And energy costs, transportation costs, taxes, I mean, it all enters into it, the price of regulations. So good on him. Then they get to birthright citizenship. You know, we had the Seattle judge, he's actually senior status now, Judge John Kuhnauer, appointed way back in the 80s. He's a Reagan judge, not a conservative judge by any stretch, but he was appointed during the Reagan era. And he slammed the birthright citizenship executive order, striking down birthright citizenship for people in the country illegally, and basically said, oh, it's so obvious, it's not even worth talking about. For heaven's sakes, go hire a lawyer next time you do an EO. J.D. Vance, a Yale-educated attorney, as you can guess, went a little bit deeper than Judge Kuhnauer. Have a listen.
There are five legal challenges already to one of the other immigration actions, the order on birthright citizenship. A federal judge appointed by Ronald Reagan, I think you'd agree, has some conservative credentials, paused the order to end birthright citizenship, calling it blatantly unconstitutional. How do you reconcile this challenge to the 14th Amendment to the Constitution?
So I obviously disagree with that judge, and these things, some of them will be litigated. That's the nature of our constitutional system. But here's the basic idea of President Trump's view on this. If you are a lawful permanent resident or a legal immigrant who plans to stay, your children, of course, should become American citizens. But let's say you're the child of an ambassador. You don't become...
But that's not part of it.
Well, that is an important principle. But we're saying that that carve-out should apply to anybody who doesn't plan to stay here. If you come here on vacation and you have a baby in an American hospital, that baby doesn't become an American citizen. If you're an illegal alien and you come here temporarily, hopefully, your child does not become an American citizen by virtue of just having been born on American soil. It's a very basic principle in American immigration law that if you want to become an American citizen and you've done it the right way, and the American people in their collective mm-hmm. wisdom have welcomed you into our national community, then you become a citizen. But temporary residents, people who come in here, whether legally or illegally, and don't plan to stay, yep. their children shouldn't become American citizens. I don't know any country that does that or why we would be different.
Well, this is a country founded by immigrants.
Well, this is a country
founded
by... This
is a unique country.
This is a very unique country, and it was founded by some immigrants and some settlers, but just because we were founded by immigrants doesn't mean that 240 years later that we have to have the dumbest immigration policy in the world. No country says that temporary visitors, their children, will be given complete access to the benefits and blessings of American citizenship. America should actually look out for the interests of our citizens first, and that means, again, if you're here permanently mm-hmm. and lawfully, your kid becomes an American citizen. If you're not here permanently, if you're not subject to the jurisdiction of the United States yep. and don't plan to be, why would we make those people's children American citizens permanently?
I love that line. I absolutely loved that line from J.D. Vance. Yes, we're a nation of immigrants. That doesn't mean we have to have the dumbest immigration policy in the world. That's what the supporters of open borders, that really is their policy. Just read the Statue of Liberty. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. See, that should be our immigration policy. Needs to go a step deeper than that. And there's no real evidence that Judge Kunauer has actually spent a lot of time doing some hard thinking about the 14th Amendment. Now, it does refer to, you know, everyone's an American citizen who is born and naturalized here. But there are obvious exceptions. Again, if you are here on a tourist visa and you have a child, your child is not an American citizen because your child is subject to the jurisdiction of another country. You are from another country visiting the United States. So that is why it says born in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. So again, if you are coming here as a tourist, you have a child, your child is a citizen of your host country, your home country, where you're from. Same if you're a student and you come here, get pregnant, have a baby. Your baby is a citizen of the country from which you are from because it is subject to the jurisdiction of your home country. Because the assumption is, since you're here on a temporary visa, that you'll be going back home. Well, what about people with no visa? What about people who don't belong here and who illegally came here? Are they subject to the jurisdiction of the country they should be in and can be deported back to? You catch someone in the country illegally, and once you give them due process, prove that they are here from another country legally, they are subject to the jurisdiction of their home country. That's why you can deport them back. Because they're not from here. They are from Mexico, Honduras, Colombia, Argentina, what have you. So has this ever been tested constitutionally? No, not directly. It has been tested for immigrants. In other words, people who came here legally, who immigrated here, and had children here. So if they came to America legally to live, if they were admitted as full-time residents and had a child, is their child an American? This was tested in the late 1890s, and the answer is yes, because of the 14th Amendment. But what if they did not come here legally? What if they are a Honduran from Honduras who snuck in? Or they are from Mexico and they snuck in? The assumption being made is, well, they did have their baby here. The 14th Amendment says, you know, born in the United States. So I guess so. But then you get into, well, then what does it mean that you are subject to the jurisdiction thereof? If you are from another country and you've not been cleared to come to this country, are you not a citizen subject to the jurisdiction of your home country? The honest answer from me, I don't know. The 14th Amendment, there have been books written on the 14th Amendment. Now, you could say, well, hold on. You know, every constitutional amendment has a paper trail, if you will, debate during the amendment process. What was the debate about? Well, the debate wasn't about immigration at all. The debate was about giving citizenship status to freed slaves and their progeny, their children. So the 14th Amendment was meant to address citizenship status for freed slaves. That was the purpose. That was the intent. It was written in a way where it includes lawful immigrants, full-time immigrants, but not those who are visiting. So what about people who aren't visiting and are not lawful immigrants? We don't know. That's what the debate about. That is a genuine, honest-to-goodness, constitutional debate that needs to happen. That's what Trump is really trying to do. Donald Trump is trying to get the U.S. Supreme Court to finally put on the record whether this is the case or not. Policy-wise, I don't think a country should ever allow the offspring of people in the country illegally to have citizenship status. Very few countries do. So let the debate commence. That's what Trump was really doing with that executive order, starting the process. He was going to lose at the district level. He's going to lose at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Let's see a full-fledged debate and argument before the U.S. Supreme Court on this question. All right? There you go. 22 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock. Philip J., Social Media Sweep. Social media from socialists right around the corner. Who's going to hang it up? Show them how to do it, Philip J. Vandervoort, the third, social media from Socialist. Show them how to do it.
I can groove that. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. On social media, on X, the chief deputy apologist for President Biden, Anna Navarro from The View. She sometimes turns up on CNN, too, I believe, still.
Only person I know who apparently is trying to become the next Joy Behar.
Yeah.
Why would anyone want to be the next Joy Behar?
So
that's Anna Navarro.
As it relates to this Donald Trump, president of Colombia, you're going to take back these illegal aliens. Yes. We're deporting to Colombia. No, we're not, says the Colombian president. You're going to get a tariff. No, we're not. and the Colombian president finally backed down on all
this. Come to think of it, why don't I send a plane and pick them up myself?
Ana Navarro posted, most of the flowers imported into the U.S. come from Colombia. Happy Valentine's Day, America. And the responses to this are just spectacular.
Yes.
Here's one. Imagine saying something this stupid to Lake and Riley's family, that the flowers imported to the U.S. come from Colombia. Happy Valentine's Day. This tweet represents the mind rot that directly led to Lake and Riley being killed. Another one wrote, the ones who voted for Trump are divorced anyways. And I think they mean... I think they mean to say,
oh, come on.
Yeah, the ones who are upset that Trump is now elected are probably
all right
in crumbling relationships. And then one other, somebody added, in response to the retaliatory actions announced by Trump, the Colombian president offered his presidential plane to assist in the repatriating of deportees. No tariffs. Trump won. Go see your therapist. And there's another one. Now, Jon Stewart is the longtime host of The Daily Show.
Mm-hmm.
He still does a podcast. He did a podcast last week with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. The interview subject matter was Trump 2.0. And the podcast description of the interview is partially titled Rebuilding the Democratic Party. So the conversation was with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Now,
what do the Democrats need to do to rebuild the Democratic Party?
If Jonathan's Stewart was doing his job.
Yep.
Jon Stewart is doing his job. Yep. He would say, do you deserve some of the blame for this catastrophic defeat?
I watched about 20, 25 minutes of it, and I came across the clips I'm going to play for you. I didn't watch the full hour plus of the interview, so I don't know if that came up, if he pressed her, which is a realistic question. But here is one of the things that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said about Trump.
But he's just the quintessential New York con man.
Con man, con jobs. Mm. This is the amount of soul searching Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is doing. To complain about con jobs, and we're told Biden's fine, and all these examples of his cognitive problems were deep fakes or distortions, the bogus claims and stories about the Trump-Russia collusion, the bogus denials about Hunter's laptop, the COVID censorship, the Inflation Reduction Act was going to curb inflation, and so many others. And she has the gall to complain about Trump being a con man. Sure, Trump's selling Bibles. He's selling some of these MFTs, and these seem to be worthless things. But Trump fans can buy that at their own volition.
I was going to say, people are
the
buying
cons,
it. That's what bothers her.
Yeah, the cons that the Democrats run involve the operation of our government and our news media, and she's complaining about con men and con jobs. Like I said, not a whole lot of self-reflection for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez as she's trying to consider how to rebuild the Democratic Party.
Still to come on the John Carlson Show, oh my goodness, it's not only Tom Homan getting in the act getting rid of people in the country illegally. Our three strikes you're outlaw just helped nab one as well in Tacoma. Details on that one straight ahead. You're listening to the John Carlson Show. I'm punching my car. Seven minutes after 8 o'clock. I have spent years warning you about threats to equality in America, to treating each other as fellow Americans, as human beings, the threat that was coming to these bedrock core principles of civil rights from the DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion movement, critical race theory and the like, all about trying to magnify the importance of race in this country rather than minimize it. Trying to treat people according to what they look like rather than focusing on their words and their actions. And I had been pointing out for the last couple of years, we called it Operation Pushback, where people were pushing back on the DEI bureaucratic structure, you know, built into schools, built into colleges, universities, corporations with their some of their diversity training seminars everyone's required to attend, government agencies and the like. We've seen the deleterious bad effects it's had on the military. Donald Trump, as I pointed out to you last week, in his first week in office, his first couple of days, just struck down DEI in the federal government and may well have foreshadowed the end of it in the private sector and in American education in our schools as well. Rich Lowry, National Review, called his executive order a, quote, breathtakingly bold and wholly righteous move that could bring about a generational change. It's called ending illegal discrimination and restoring merit-based opportunity. And he starts by yanking out, repealing a series of executive orders promoting affirmative action in government, which used to mean, back in the 60s, affirmative action, you would take affirmative action to treat people equally. Then affirmative action, you will take affirmative action to hire and promote people based on their race. That's what it became. So Trump started by repealing Lyndon Johnson's executive order from 1965 because the implementing regulations, in other words, the rules and procedures that bureaucrats write about, here's how to carry out this executive order, have created this vast leviathan of racial preferences in federal contracting. But Trump went further than that. He instructed executive departments, meaning his cabinet, the Interior Department, the Transportation Department, the Commerce Department, et cetera, et cetera. He instructed executive departments and federal agencies to, quote, terminate all discriminatory and illegal preferences, mandates, policies, programs, activities, guidance, regulations, enforcement actions, consent orders, and requirements. He ordered diversity offices in the federal government to close their doors. Again, he ordered diversity offices closed. Never mind, hey, you need to do it a little differently, or, you know, we need to make some real substantive changes here. He said, no, close it down. As long as it's open, people are going to be using it to push these policies that are so divisive and, frankly, by their hardcore inherence, are intended to be divisive. As for everyone in the federal government who worked in these offices, they've been put on paid administrative leave. He suspended contracting programs that run afoul of being race neutral or gender neutral. That by itself, again, is just stunning and historic. But Trump went further than that as well. Trump says that these race-based rules and laws and practices of DEI violate federal civil rights laws. So since they're violating federal civil rights laws, they need to start not only shut down their own operations, they need to start pushing private companies and contractors toward colorblind policies and get away from race and gender preferences. Again, this federal government of ours does over $1.7 trillion in contracts and grants every year. That's $1,700 billion. So think a billion 1,700 times. That's what we spend in contracting. Trump's order says that in their, quote, employment, procurement, and contracting practices, federal contractors and subcontractors cannot consider race, color, sex, sexual preference, religion, or national origin in ways that violate the nation's civil rights laws. Not only that, but contractors will now have to assure the government that they are not promoting DEI. And if a contractor provides false information, that business can be liable under the False Claims Act. And then beyond that, each federal agency is to identify 9 potential civil compliance investigations of publicly traded corporations, large nonprofits or associations, foundations with assets of $500 million or more.
9 times.
9 times.
9 times. State and local bar, meaning legal associations, state and local medical associations, institutions of higher education with endowments of over $1 billion. This is all intended to start getting rid of DEI, not just in the federal government, but into every entity that interacts with the federal government, which is just about every college and every university, every public school district in America, and most major corporations. Think of all the government contracts that, say, local employers, Microsoft, Starbucks, Amazon, Boeing. Think of all the contracts they have. Now they're being told, if you've got DEI, get rid of it. You're violating federal civil rights laws. Rich Lowry, in his piece on this, says this is seismic. Says maybe the administration will get stymied in the inevitable legal fights. Maybe institutions will just keep their heads down and rename their DEI programs and pursue the same noxious ends using different means. But this looks like an inflection point. By the way, they also have language to prevent them from trying to practice that kind of subterfuge of just renaming an agency and then doing the same stuff. So they're on to them. They already anticipated that with the executive order. And then he concludes, even if a new Democrat administration supports DEI, will large corporations, universities, will the entire education system now want to get whipsawed back into using DEI again? No. The more rational course is you are going to see businesses and organizations and educational institutions just get rid of DEI altogether. That is the path we are now on, watching it fall every day. What a wonderful sight to behold. All right, you're listening to The Commute with Carlson. It is 48 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. When we come back, a three striker in Tacoma. It's another way of getting illegals out of our neighborhoods. We'll tell you about the details of this case coming up. It's 7 minutes to 8 o'clock. So while Tom Homan is conducting ICE raids, that's one way of getting illegals who commit crimes in our country out of our system. Guess what? There's another way as well. Our three strikes are out there. Got a real bad one right out of Tacoma. Get this. Someone who took full advantage of Sanctuary racked up three strikes while here. 46-year-old Ruben Cervantes Rios, sentenced on Friday after we were off the air, to life with free room and board, courtesy of the Department of Corrections, under Washington's three strikes you're out law. Before he was sentenced, he told Pierce County Superior Court Judge Sabrina Ahrens in a letter written in Spanish that the shooting of his 31-year-old wife, Heather, was an accident. Said it was never his intention to hurt her. And he wanted to apologize to her family, let them know he suffered just as they are. Quote, to suggest that this was just an accident when you had the power, the ability to seek some care for her just flies in the face of reason, said Judge Ahrens. He shot her. Apparently, they were involved in some sort of a drug deal. They were there dealing drugs. She gets on the wrong side of him. He gets angry, and he shoots her in the shoulder. It goes into her neck and then through her mouth. She started bleeding out, and he did not call for help and ended up trying to get away on a bicycle when a passerby saw what was happening and summoned police. Anyway, this guy is just 20 miles of bad road. Should not be have been in this country in the first place, but now he got his third strike. He's going away. Bye-bye forever. That is a good thing. What else will be a good thing is when we talk again in 21 short hours, all the time we have for now. Enjoy the sunshine. Have a great day.